Welcome to Center Stage, all things arts and entertainment. We just believe you ought to know about it. We have some really great guests lined up for you tonight, and Steve Noonan is our first. Take a listen. I listened to so many samples of this album. I really had a good time listening to it. And Steve Noonan, welcome to WCCO. How are you?
Hello, Geraldine Steele, multi-talented, great singer and member of the famous group, The Steels. I am so happy to be talking to you tonight on the air on the pillar of Minnesota broadcasting, A3OWCCO Radio. Thank you for inviting me onto your show, Geraldine.
So glad to hear your voice. You are a former recording engineer for Prince. Your music is a blend of influences from 70s songwriter, artist, and 80s postmodern bands. Now, the end result are very clear to people. Your vocals are intertwined and pleasingly connected sections, all surrounded by your 12-string guitarish lush open chords. You are still playing the 12-string guitar?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I love the 12-string guitar, Geraldine. It just has a lot of, you know, fullness to it. It's inspiring when I songwrite. And, I still play it. And I've been playing it for probably 12 years now. I'm very happy with it. I play acoustic and electric.
And how long have you been writing songs?
Gosh, well, I've been writing for, I had two waves of writing. You know, in the 90s when I was working with Prince. Actually, we've met before, you know, when I was a recording engineer.
Yeah.
So I've been writing back then, and then kind of got out of the music business, and then had a new wave of songwriting. I started around 2009, and I just wanted these songs to be heard, so I made a couple records, and I made a couple down in Nashville with Dustin Burnett producing, and then this last one I made here in Minnesota with Chris Firth producing.
Right. So you really waited for a little while to make this happen. How do you feel about it now that you hear it? People are talking about it. I read a lot of the reviews from people that mentioned how much they loved it. I want to hear how you felt about it.
Well, thanks for reading those. Yeah, I feel really good about it. You know, Geraldine, after putting the effort into it, you write the songs. You know, I write on just a guitar and me. And then I put them together. I get the charts together and I get the musicians together to learn them. One of which you know very well, Tommy Barbarella, is playing on this record. And he said to say hello to you tonight.
I said, oh, he's like a brother, man.
He's a talented cat, I know. I actually wanted him to be here for a surprise guest, but he has a gig tonight. But yes, to answer your question, you know, I love the way it came out because you hear the song, you write the songs, you record them, and they get bigger and bigger, and they blossom, and you finally hear the finished product, mixed and mastered. It's just it's a great feeling, and I like the way this one turned out.
You know, back in the late 60s and 70s, a lot of the artists would try to make sure that the music they wrote for that specific album had a certain sound to it. Like, there was a little piece of that sound in every song recorded. Nowadays, you can put anything you want on an album. You can put anything, and it is amazing how many fans really enjoy that. What is your process of writing the songs and making sure how they land on the album?
Well, the process of writing with me is I get a groove going. And then I get a melody to fit the groove, and then I get the words that fit the melody. Then I, once I get those together, then I kind of figure out, well, how do I want this to sound? Do I want it stripped down? Do I want it large? And lately, that's the direction I've been going, is larger sound. And it really, sometimes I, you know, write a song on an acoustic 12-string, and then I move it to the electric, and I find a whole new sound to it, just because of the sustain on electric guitar. So that's basically it. Once they start to blossom, they kind of get to be an animal of their own, and they go in certain directions. And then once you record them, then things really start to blossom. So that's pretty much it.
When you decided to put the band together and you said, okay, I'm happy with what I have, what about vocalists? Are you the only vocals on the album, or do you have some background singers as well?
Oh, yeah, I've got two really good background singers, two female vocalists. I've got Lauren Burrell and Elise Jones singing background on the record. And I do a couple spots. I sing the backgrounds, but I kind of like the way the female vocalist sounds against my lead vocals. Mm-hmm. So it's me on the lead and mainly the two women on the backgrounds.
Okay, so once you produce this this new album, I mean, it's been around for how long now? It's called Dreamland. How long has it been out?
Well, not that long. It just came out on January 29th. Yeah, so it's just starting to get the ball rolling.
I thought it was 2021, man. I'm behind.
Oh, no.
Okay, so you've been putting this out already, and people are responding to it. So then where do you go next? That's the big question. People fall in love with the music. They start listening to it. They start sharing it on all the social medias. People start listening, buying the project. Then when do you say, uh-oh, it's doing well, I better get started on the next one? Or do you just sit and enjoy it?
Well, both. First, I sit and enjoy it, and then I say, uh-oh, I better get going on the next one. But as you know, yeah. As a musician yourself, you know, you're always working on a new thing. I've got songs cooking right now in the kitchen that I'm working on for the next record. And, you know, I want people also to hear this, if they like it, hope they do dig it, to go back to my other records, because I think I'm proud of those, too. I Could Be Anywhere and A Mile Long. Those are two other records that have similar sounds. So I'm hoping to get some new fans to delve into my previous releases, as well as look forward to the next release.
Well, I just think I got a chance to listen to a couple of things, and I kept saying to myself, this is Steve Noonan? Oh, my gosh. So it's been a long time since I have talked to you or seen you or, you know, really heard anything by you. So this is really quite a journey listening. And as you listen back, is there something you say, oh, my gosh, Sherilyn, I just wish I had done this one thing, or I wish I hadn't done this thing?
For this record, I guess maybe the one thing I wish I had done is just taken a measure out of one song. That's about it. And then one thing I wish I, or glad I did, I don't know. I don't have too many regrets here. I think that I'm pretty happy with the package. I mean, I like the artwork. I had some really good people working on that. Jerome Ferendorf and Tom Freund and a lot of good musicians playing on the record. So I don't have too many things that I would have changed. Chris First is a talented producer, and we recorded it all here in Ham Lake, Minnesota. And got, you know, Josh Hurl is a guitarist on it who lives in Hawaii, so we sent the file down there.
Nice.
Other than that, they're all local musicians. Blair Krevenick, Tommy Barbarella, as I said, you know, Tim Zorney, Nick Salisbury, Jordan Headland, all these guys can play. And it was all recorded here, and then I mastered it here too, locally at Rare Form Mastering. So it's kind of a Minnesota record.
Okay, I'm going to ask you this question. I had a chance to really listen to your tracks, especially the ones that were called the top tracks for Steve Noonan. Now, when I heard Either Way, I was excited, because that's always the question. Do you sing Either Way or Either Way? Because Either Way does not sound as good. You probably made that decision as soon as you wrote the song that it's going to be called Either Way. Am I right?
You are right. I made that decision immediately. And I actually thought about putting the little, you know, the phonic mark above the long symbol in the dictionary, where you put it over the I, you know, Either Way, so that people don't confuse it. But I think once they hear the song, then they'll remember it. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about the song that I really wanted to know about from you. My Words Will Reach You. My Words Will Reach You.
Yes,
tell me how that formed in your heart and soul.
Well, that song is about talking to a sleeping lover, and you're trying to get the words through and tell that person how you feel, yet they're sleeping. And you're wondering if they can actually hear what you're thinking, hear the words that you whisper. So that is that's what that song is about. That's actually one of my favorites on the record, so I'm glad that you brought that up.
It's interesting, isn't it? Once we finish a song like that with those important lyrics to it, it can be a changing force in how you write sometimes. Just that one song or how people react to it. And then you say, maybe I need to do something like that again. Or do you just say, that's been done, keep going forward?
Well, I like to think that I keep going forward. But if there's something that really resonates with people, something that they like, I will explore another song that's similar to that. Or, you know, I mean, I'm open to many things. I've got a lot of ideas and a lot of song snippets that can work into songs. I mean, I'm not afraid to rewrite things. If I get a song and there's some section that just doesn't sit right with me, I'm not going to be married to it. I'm going to get back to the drawing board and rework it and make it so that it, you know, passes my standards. So, yeah, I'm open to most anything.
I am constantly trying to build my voice, you know, to just, I start practicing how to sing classical songs in various languages. I keep trying to make it better, make it stronger so that it will last as long as it can last. Do you ever have concerns about your fingers and how you play? Is it just your voice or is it everything, every part of you that deposits into that album? Do you get concerned at all and say, hey, at this age, maybe I should slow down, or no, maybe I should speed up?
Well, no, I'm always trying to improve, just like you, but you don't have much room for improvement. Come on now. But I'm,
I do.
I'm always trying to, you know, become a better player, become a better singer, become a better songwriter. Because, you know, I like the craft. I enjoy music a lot, as you know, and I want to become better. I want to be a better singer. I like to think I'm better than I was, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
So I'm always, you know, in search of the better craft.
Well, we're in search of it all with you, dude. I really, really enjoyed listening to your songs. His name is Steve Noonan. StevenoonanSongs.com is his website. And I can't wait to hear more of it. I know that you'll be performing someplace soon, I hope. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Where can we go see you?
We're working on some gigs for the summer. I don't have anything on the books here. It's a little bit slow in coming after the COVID is, you know, changed here. But we're working on some things. We should have some shows for when the warm weather comes. But nothing I can
tell
you
about. Will you
let me know? Just yet. Yes, I will.
Yeah, let me know. Send me that information so we can talk about that and give you a shout out. I really appreciate it, Steve. So great to have you on and hear your voice, dude.
Thanks, Gerilyn. Yeah.
Take
good to
care
hear your
of
voice,
you.
Too.
All right. Take care.
Thanks. Thank
Bye.
You. Bye.
Again, that is Steven Noonan. I'm sorry, Steve Noonan. It's interesting because you can say Steven and then Unans. But it's SteveNoonansSongs.com. Take care, Steve. Be well.
Thanks. Thank you.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk about Hit the Road Jack. Who are we talking about? Jack Ruler. We'll be back. Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more. Love this song. Okay, the future of Mixed Blood Theater will be unveiled later this week. Yep, so hit the road, Jack. All talking about Jack Ruler. This is happening on February 22nd of 2022. It's the date that the theater will name the new artistic director, replacing the legendary Jack Ruler, who is retiring. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to hear your voice, Jack. You know, you're part of our family, man. We really do love you. You're like family to us. And just hearing you talk about finally leaving and getting a new artistic director, which I think you started talking about that in 1999. But here we are. We finally are. And I can imagine what it took for you to make the decision. Tell us about that journey.
You know, I really think that it was when COVID hit in 2020, Mixed Blood, instead of, we sort of took it personally that theater was at the lowest tier of essential. And so we started a strategic plan, say, how are we going to reinvent ourselves so that theater can actually be essential? When things like this happen, we look to theater rather than look away from theater. And then after George Floyd, we really did introspection and realized it was time. I spent a career railing against old white guys, then I became one. So it was time for a change in leadership. And the board really did a great job over the last 20 months of putting together a great process to lead us to 2/22/22, which is the day on which the new person will be revealed to the world.
Here's what's amazing to me. When I was living in Los Angeles, you know, people really paid attention to the age of the artistic director. Same thing in a few places in New York that I've been. And I look at it here in the Twin Cities, and we've seen a big change of artistic directors throughout the theater world. And some of them are young, very young, and some of them are middle age, but very few are older. Tell me why that is, because you still have the wherewithal. You still have the brilliance to put on great shows. So I'm assuming you're going to continue doing that someplace else.
You know, I am going to continue to work in the fields, realm of social justice, and whether it's through theater or other ways, I will not be disappearing. My family's been in the Twin Cities since 1880, so I'm going to stick around and hopefully still have some influence. But I do think I think that what's happened with a number of us that stayed around, you know, it'll be 46 years for me and many other artistic directors. I think, you know, I don't know that there should be term limits, but there are going to be many artistic directors that don't stay in the same position. So I think what has happened is the aberration and younger people moving between organizations and moving, you know, to find their place in the American theater is just, it's part of the natural ecosystem and evolution of a field that has got to change in the wake of what's happened between the, you know, global pandemic and what's happened here in the Twin Cities.
One thing about theater is that it's still growing. We have brand new artists that come from other cities and states that come to Minnesota, and they're always surprised. Even some of the Broadway shows that come, they're always surprised at the talent from right here in the Twin Cities and beyond. Here's the thing I don't understand is that if we can bring in even some of the older actors, like at the Guthrie Theater, you see more, I think I see more older actors at the shows that I go to at the Guthrie than I see the younger ones. And so in my mind, I'm not surprised when I see someone older, my age or even a little bit older. Is that a trend or is that just a consequence?
I think it's just a matter of what that artistic director's taste in and the show they've curated, the season they've curated and the show they're producing. So I don't think anybody's intentionally saying we are doing a season of, I mean, there are a couple of theaters that are in town, Prime mm-hmm. Productions and Theater
right.
55 that are intentionally for artists 55 and over. But for the most part, there is no trend or pattern trying to hire older actors. There's just a lot of, again, there's a lot of us that have stuck around and have made a name. And I think the theaters are glad to have them on their stages. But I don't think there's a trend in that direction. But I do think, as you say, when people come from other towns, they're surprised at Minneapolis's art scene and theater scene in particular. It's sort of like a unicorn. You've heard about it, and then when you actually get here, it's real.
Right.
So
well,
I'm
as we
part of it for the last 46 years.
Okay, so you've been part of it. You've been more than part of it. Not only were you the artistic director of Mixed Blood Theater, but you are an activist as well for theater, for making sure that we are still getting the word out there through theater. You know, you can accept certain ideas when it comes to watching a show at a theater. It's different. It talks to the mind, that piece. And you come out of there remembering quite a bit, or if you did not, you get one trinket that's really important. As we move forward, is that still the thing that is meant to happen at each of the shows?
I think even more so, Geraldine, that over the years, and that's probably at the heart of this strategic direction we're taking, we've tried to use our theater to reveal the change that needs to be made. And now we're going to use our theater to actually drive that change to be made. So it's not just what's the important conversation you have after seeing a show, but rather what is your sustained call to action? How are you going to leave that and actually affect some change in whatever area we've tried to guide you to think more deeply about? And so I do think that is how we are going to become essential, by actually helping to affect change.
The ebb and flow of theater is quite interesting. I'll never forget how you began the understanding or acceptance to other people saying, hey, hospitality, right? Radical hospitality is so important.
Right.
And people really started to come. You were able to offer free tickets to people at times, and I'm blown away by that. What else should we expect from your theater, Mixed Blood Theater? What are we to look forward to now?
Well, you know, I think that this weekend I went and saw a show by Theater Moo, and I went and saw a show at the Jungle, and both of those theaters have pay what you're able to. And I think that there is something in that that is a result of now 11 years of Mixed Blood since we introduced radical hospitality, to trying to say, how do we let our stages be inviting, welcoming, affirming destinations for people? And so we feel good about that. But what Mixed Blood is going to be, you know, one of the things that COVID has allowed me to do in preparation for the next era of, you know, I hope that by the end of the week, I'm the second best artistic director that Mixed Blood will have ever had. And I think that I've been able to shed the things that are tied to Mixed Blood, that are tied to me. And so that person will really get a clean slate to make McFlood their own and change the world. You know, I was never going to be a preacher, a politician, or an orator. The stage became my voice. And you're right. I still have, it is as an activist that I've come to work every day all these years. And I think that the activism and the theater as a tool and instrument of justice is what will continue in deeper and more interesting ways.
Well, we have to leave this conversation, unfortunately, but I have to tell you, as artistic director of Mixed Blood Theater, you have made us think, you have made us feel, you have brought joy, and you have given the sadness that some needed to grieve through. So thank you so much for all that you did at Mixed Blood Theater, and I have a feeling we're still going to see you around from time to time, and I look forward to that.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. Thank you for all that you do.
Congratulations. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, that if you don't know who Jack is, really, he's a remarkable man. He's not just the artistic director. He is also the founder of this theater, and that is remarkable. So as we move on up, we have a lot more for this hour, so stay tuned. I love this album. I really do. And I bet a lot of you do as well. That's Matt Wilson singing. So a year ago, we talked with Matt Wilson about When I Was a Writer. That's the title of the album, which debuted during COVID-19. Now Matt and his orchestra get to play the album in front of a live, sold out crowd later this week at the Parkway Theater. I am so excited for you, Matt. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm excited too. I'm super excited.
You should be. You know, when I saw the title of this, When I Was a Writer, I mean, you are known to be a writer. You write a lot of songs and more. I'm just wondering, why did you choose that particular title for this album?
Well, you know, I had a lapse. I've been writing for, you know, ever since I was in high school. But I had a lapse there, and I fell away from it. I kind of lost my footing, and then it came back. I wrote a song that was kind of triggered in an odd way, and I got my songwriting mojo back, and that was one of the songs that came up. Was just about kind of losing it and losing my feeling like I've lost my status and my way, and then finding it again.
Well, you sure found it. I think some of the songs are just fantastic. I was so excited that you were joining me tonight and talking about this project. Knowing that you did this during COVID-19 and released it then, tell me how you got to that decision. So many artists just stopped. They were writing, but they just kind of stopped and said, I'm not going to put anything out until this pandemic is over with. And we really thought it would be over with by the end of 2021, but that hasn't happened. So tell me, right, when did you decide, okay, didn't work out, let's do it now?
Well, you know, our record release was set for kind of the dawn of COVID lockdown on May 2020. And so it wasn't clear how real this was, we were set to do this show, this very exact show that we're going to do on Saturday, all the way back on May 20th of 2020. And instead we did a kind of like the first streaming show that we ever tried on that day. We streamed it instead just from our rehearsal studio. And that was super fun. But then we released the record kind of into a little bit of a, you know, chasm. Just because there was no, we couldn't tour after that. And so, but we just, we kind of had to release it. The machinery was just kind of rolling. And so we just put it out because we were just a little bit ahead of the time when we might have thought twice about it.
Well, thinking twice about it was to our advantage, because knowing that you have this show, it's already sold out, man. Nobody can even get tickets. Are you going to do a second show or something?
I don't know. We're going to do this one for sure. We've been waiting for it for so long. I've just been dying to do it. I think everyone, you know, I think it's been rescheduled a couple times, and everyone's just kind of hung in there. We'll do this one, and then I'm sure we'll just kind of do something soon after, but I'm not sure where or what.
Well, when you do know, you got to let me know that for sure. Tell me about the orchestra.
Okay, so the orchestra is it's different from most groups. It's got a bass player, Jacques, that I've played with for a long time, who kind of knows me, but he's always played guitar in my band. So now he's a bass player. And then I won't say I discovered them, but they're around and they're great, but a really terrific harp player named Fela Tracy. And so she plays the, you know, 6 foot tall harp, a real harp.
Right.
And it's an amazing instrument. And she just happens to be, she's tremendous. She's very imaginative and a great arranger. Often I'll come in with a melody and she'll create the harmonies. And then we'll sing those harmonies. And so
yeah,
that's Fela. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that Fela is that voice. You know, she actually comes in singing while she's playing the harp. I've never seen that before. So
yeah.
I was excited to watch the video. Awesome.
Yeah, she's for real. And then Quillen Rowe is in this something called an old-time band in town, the Rowe Family Singers. He's a great singer. He plays banjo. And so the harp and the banjo together are this kind of staff-plucking. They make a nice, interesting sound together. And then I play guitar and piano along with that. And so it can be very dreamy. And it's good for my gentle voice to be surrounded by these this kind of feather bed of instruments like that.
Yeah, but your lyrics and the way you sing it is powerful to me. I really enjoy listening to some of it. And you're right, it's not an orchestra. You actually admit that on your website, but you put it like this. It's more like a banjo, harp, gentle, rockin', happy machine.
Yeah,
that's pretty cute. And as I was listening to it, I kept thinking to myself, wow, they should take this on the road. So, of course, I'm going to ask you about touring. Is that in your future?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we took a trip out to L.A. Before the lockdown, and just to kind of dip our toe into going out to the coast. And it was really, really fun. And then we had something set up to go out to New York and just kind of try it out there. And that's when everything shut down. But as we get our footing again, and I'm sure that we're going to keep just kind of expanding and mainly hitting, I think, like bigger towns for the most part, until we can make more sense out of touring more widely.
Well, I sure hope you do. You are still so talented, so talented. And hearing your voice, I even watched you on The Current at your live performance. It was just beautiful. Mm-hmm. So please tell them all that I said, well done. I can imagine that this album will be out there, people listening to it for a long time. Again, it's called When I Was a Writer. And where can they pick it up? Everywhere online?
Yeah. If you go to the shameless plug, but mainly just so people can get at the record. My record is called my website is MinneapolisMatt.com, just because there's so many Matt Wilsons. So I called it Minneapolis Matt. And because I'm that one, you know, not the other one.
You're that one. That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, and then from there, it can take you off to our record company, which is Pravda Records. And that's where you can get our record.
Well, congratulations to you. Even though you released it during COVID, which was quite brave of you, you came right back and said, okay, now I know we can do this. And not only are you doing it, you have a sold out house already. So if people want more information about where to get tickets, do they go to your site?
Yep. That's a great place to go. Matt Wilson, or MinneapolisMatt.com.
Minneapolis Met, and that's M-A-T-T, MinneapolisMet.com. Yep. I wish you well, my friend. I wish you had some tickets available. If there's a second show that you're going to do, please let me know, and I hope I'll have a day to let people know. So thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Geraldine, thank you. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, sir. Take care.
Bye.
Can you imagine putting out an album during COVID time? Oh, my gosh. There were many who tried, and a lot of people did it over line. But just to know that even now, since that album has been out, it is being revered, and people are looking forward to hearing this concert that is already sold out. How wonderful is that, right, for an artist to hear that sold-out crowd? And that'll be at the Parkway Theater. Maybe they'll add a second show, but maybe not. All right, we're going to take a break. And, of course, we're coming up with our last guest for Center Stage. And, of course, they are called Surge and the Swell. I love that title. And, of course, I'll be talking with Aaron Cabbage about their songwriting and what type of music they really work on. And he was born in Kentucky and raised in Southeast Texas, so I can't wait to talk to him. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to Center Stage. I tell you, this hour always uplifts me. Sometimes you hear about bands that you know really well, and other times you find and meet them right on the spot. And I am so excited to talk with Surge and Swell. I don't know this name, but it is the collaboration vehicle of Minnesota-based Americana indie folk singer, songwriter Aaron Cabbage. Born in Kentucky, raised in Southeast Texas via Indiana, and now calling Minnesota home, his influences run north to south. Now, the goal of this LP, this debut LP called Offering, was to create introspective, soaring chorus Americana with a theme of accepting new normal. Songs like Full in the Now, love that title, Hard Work, and Gravity Boots. So cool. We're inspired by the shifts in daily life experienced in the global pandemic and stresses placed on the workforce. Well, joining me now to talk about it is Aaron Cabbage. How you doing, Aaron?
Hey, good, Geraldine. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So glad you're joining me. I'm doing great, man. I've been listening to great music all day today. So yours is no. Yeah, exactly. So here's the thing. When you come together and you put this whole thing together, it's a big thing. This band that you have is huge. Tell us more about the members of Surge and Swell.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of one of the goals of going with the band name was just to indicate something that kind of hinted at growth and kind of forward motion. And, you know, rather than just going with the name and trying to write some songs, I really wanted to have it be a collaboration vehicle, as you mentioned at the top. Adam Levy is a bit of a mentor of mine. From a songwriting perspective, had taken a couple of songwriting courses with him. And kind of early on, about a couple of years ago, started to kind of bounce, you know, things off of him from a songwriting perspective, and ultimately, pulled together a group, including Noah Levy, Isaac Levy, Adam, Steve Wold, Katie Garrity, who you heard on the track there at the top, I think.
I love this album. I really do. And I bet a lot of you do as well. That's Matt Wilson singing. So a year ago, we talked with Matt Wilson about When I Was a Writer. That's the title of the album, which debuted during COVID-19. Now Matt and his orchestra get to play the album in front of a live sold out crowd later this week at the Parkway Theater. I am so excited for you, Matt. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm excited too. I'm super excited.
You should be. You know, when I saw the title of this, When I Was a Writer, I mean, you are known to be a writer. You write a lot of songs and more. I'm just wondering, why did you choose that particular title for this album?
Well, you know, I had a lapse. I've been writing for, you know, ever since I was in high school. But I had a lapse there, and I fell away from it, and I kind of lost my footing. And then it came back. I wrote a song that was kind of triggered in an odd way, and I got my songwriting mojo back, and that was one of the songs that came up. Was just about kind of losing it and losing my feeling like I've lost my status and my way, and then finding it again.
Well, you sure found it. I think some of the songs are just fantastic. And I was so excited that you were joining me tonight and talking about this project. Knowing that you did this during COVID-19 and released it then, tell me how you got to that decision. So many artists just stopped. They were writing, but they just kind of stopped and said, I'm not going to put anything out until this pandemic is over with. And we really thought it would be over with by the end of 2021, but that hasn't happened. So tell me, right. When did you decide, okay, didn't work out, let's do it now?
Well, you know, it was, we were kind of, we literally, our record release was set for kind of the dawn of COVID lockdown on May 2020. And so it wasn't clear how real this was, we were set to do this show, this very exact show that we're going to do on Saturday, all the way back on May 20th of 2020. And instead, we did a kind of like the first streaming show that we ever tried on that day. We streamed it instead just from our rehearsal studio. And that was super fun. But then we released the record kind of into a little bit of a, you know, chasm. We couldn't tour after that. We kind of had to release it. The machinery was just kind of rolling. And so we just put it out because we were just a little bit ahead of the time when we might have thought twice about it.
Well, thinking twice about it was to our advantage, because knowing that you have this show, it's already sold out, man. Nobody can even get tickets. Are you going to do a second show or something?
I don't know. We're going to do this one for sure. We've been waiting for it for so long. I've just been dying to do it. It's been rescheduled a couple times, and everyone's just kind of hung in there. We'll do this one, and then I'm sure we'll just kind of do something soon after, but I'm not sure where or what.
Well, when you do know, you got to let me know that for sure. Tell me about the orchestra.
Okay, so the orchestra is it's different from most groups. It's got a bass player, Jacques, that I've played with for a long time, who kind of knows me, but he's always played guitar in my band. So now he's a bass player. And then I won't say I discovered them. They're around and they're great, but a really terrific harp player named Fela Tracy. And so she plays the, 6 foot tall harp, a real harp.
Right.
And it's an amazing instrument. And she just happens to be, she's tremendous. She's very, imaginative and a great arranger. Often I'll come in with a melody and she'll create the harmonies, and then we'll sing those harmonies. And so yeah, that's Fela. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that Fela is that voice. You know, she actually comes in singing while she's playing the harp. I've never seen that before. So yeah. I was excited to watch the video. Awesome.
Yeah, she's for real. Quillen Rowe is in this something called an old-time band in town, the Rowe Family Singers. He's a great singer. He plays banjo. And so the harp and the banjo together are this kind of staff-plucking. They make a nice, interesting sound together. And then I play guitar and piano along with that. It can be very dreamy, and it's good for my gentle voice to be surrounded by these this kind of feather bed of instruments like that.
Yeah, but your lyrics and the way you sing it is powerful to me. I really enjoyed listening to some of it. And you're right, it's not an orchestra. You actually admit that on your website, but you put it like this. It's more like a banjo, harp, gentle, rockin', happy machine.
Yeah,
that's pretty cute. And as I was listening to it, I kept thinking to myself, wow, they should take this on the road. So, of course, I'm going to ask you about touring. Is that in your future?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we took a trip out to L.A. before the lockdown, and just to kind of dip our toe into going out to the coast. And it was really, really fun. And then we had something set up to go out to New York and just kind of try it out there. And that's when that everything shut down. But as we get our footing again, and I'm sure that we're going to keep just kind of expanding and mainly hitting, I think, like, bigger towns for the most part, you know, until we can make more sense out of touring more widely.
Well, I sure hope you do. You are still so talented, so talented. And hearing your voice, I even watched you on The Current, your live performance. It was just beautiful. Mm-hmm. So please tell them all that I said, well done. I can imagine that this album will be out there, people listening to it for a long time. Again, it's called When I Was a Writer. And where can they pick it up? Everywhere online?
Yeah. If you go to the... Shameless plug, but mainly just so people can get at the record. My record is called Minneapolis. I mean, my website is MinneapolisMatt.com, just because there's so many Matt Wilsons. So I called it Minneapolis Matt. And because I'm that one, you know, not the other one.
You're that one. That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, and then from there, it can take you off to our record company, which is Pravda Records. And that's where you can get our record.
Well, congratulations to you. Even though you released it during COVID, which was quite brave of you, you came right back and said, okay, now I know we can do this. And not only are you doing it, you have a sold out house already. So if people want more information about where to get tickets, do they go to your site?
Yep. That's a great way, great place to go. Matt Wilson, or MinneapolisMatt.com.
Minneapolis Matt, and that's M-A-T-T, MinneapolisMatt.com. I wish you well, my friend. I wish you had some tickets available. If there's a second show that you're going to do, please let me know, and I hope I'll have a day to let people know. So thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Geraldine, thank you. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, sir. Take care.
Bye.
Can you imagine putting out an album during COVID time? Oh, my gosh. There were many who tried, and a lot of people did it over line. But just to know that even now, since that album has been out, it is being revered, and people are looking forward to hearing this concert that is already sold out. How wonderful is that, right, for an artist to hear that sold-out crowd? And that'll be at the Parkway Theater. Maybe they'll add a second show, but maybe not. All right, we're going to take a break. And, of course, we're coming up with our last guest for Center Stage. And, of course, they are called Surge and the Swell. I love that title. And, of course, I'll be talking with Aaron Cabbage about their songwriting and what type of music they really work on. And he was born in Kentucky and raised in Southeast Texas, so I can't wait to talk to him. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to Center Stage. I tell you, this hour always uplifts me. Sometimes you hear about bands that you know really well, and other times you find and meet them right on the spot. And I am so excited to talk with Surge and Swell. I don't know this name, but it is the collaboration vehicle of Minnesota-based Americana indie folk singer, songwriter Aaron Cabbage. Born in Kentucky, raised in Southeast Texas via Indiana, and now calling Minnesota home, his influences run north to south. Now, the goal of this LP, this debut LP called Offering, was to create introspective, soaring chorus Americana with a theme of accepting new normal. Songs like Full in the Now, love that title, Hard Work, and Gravity Boots. So cool. We're inspired by the shifts in daily life experienced in the global pandemic and stresses placed on the workforce. Well, joining me now to talk about it is Aaron Cabbage. How you doing, Aaron?
Hey, good, Geraldine. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So glad you're joining me. I'm doing great, man. I've been listening to great music all day today. So yours is no. Yeah, exactly. So here's the thing. When you come together and you put this whole thing together, it's a big thing. This band that you have is huge. Tell us more about the members of Surge and Swell.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of one of the goals of going with the band name was just to indicate something that kind of hinted at growth and kind of forward motion. And, you know, rather than just going with the name and trying to write some songs, I really wanted to have it be a collaboration vehicle, as you mentioned at the top. Adam Levy is a bit of a mentor of mine. I, from a songwriting perspective, had taken a couple of songwriting courses with him, and early on, about a couple of years ago, started to kind of bounce, you know, things off of him from a songwriting perspective, and ultimately, you know, pulled together a group, including Noah Levy, Isaac Levy, Adam, Steve Wold, Katie Garrity, who you heard on the track there at the top, I think. Yeah. And then Sarah Souter and Matthew Kirkwald, and then with a couple of other members, Sarah Roddy and Randy Onichek, Kevin, and I think one of the tracks on the album has a, not think, I know one of the tracks on the album has a, an organ track from Kevin Gastonguay. So it's, yeah, it's been, you know, at the Ice House gig, from March 5th, album release, Josh Kaplan will be playing drums with us. So it's really, yeah, it's just the community that I've met here since I started this project is pretty incredible.
It really is. I mean, as I was reading about it, first of all, to know that you, did you spend time in Indiana? I just want to make sure I'm clear on that.
Yeah, I feel like also, you know, we almost may have, we almost crossed paths in Gary. My oldest brother was born in Gary, Indiana, but I was, my parents had moved back to Owensboro, where I was born. And then we quickly, I think at a couple months old, moved to Texas. So, you know, when I moved back to Indiana in, seventh grade, I still had a pretty thick accent and said y'all a lot. and I think I was just young enough to get teased and, to kind of neutralize the accent. And then I just followed a family up to Minnesota in 98, and obviously love it here, and it's home.
Are they a family of performers or musicians?
We grew up in, my dad played in bands in high school in Owensboro, and he's, you know, he's an accountant by trade, but he's always been a bit of an artist. So, you know, when I originally kind of set up the home studio, I felt like it was the equivalent of, you know, I grew up listening to him play piano at night, so I could, you know, whether he knows it or not, I could always hear him from the other room, you know. I think he, I love the song, but he did play Joy to the World too many times. But you know, I grew up listening to him play, and so I think, you know, that was a big part of it. And he's always been a woodworker as well. So, you know, he goes into the shop and makes art. And I kind of feel like initially songwriting for me was just that. It was just an outlet, you know, something I could spend 3 or 4 hours doing and not think twice about it.
If I'm not mistaken, this particular project, is it an EP with 6 songs or is it a full album?
No, great question. Yeah, last year I had a EP with 6 songs, and one of them was called Love 4000, which was a bit of a long distance relationship love song, and it started to kind of get some traction here recently, ironically. But this was this is an 11 song LP, so it's my first LP,
wow.
And yeah, it's 11 songs is a lot more than 6, I'll say.
You got that right.
In terms of pulling it all together, recording, I guess what the proverbial, or I don't know if it's attributing this wrong, but Quincy Jones, making an album is like painting a school bus with a toothbrush, is what it says. But it's a lot more work, but it was,
right.
It was really, really rewarding.
Where can people get the album?
Yeah, so it's available March 4th. There are 2 singles out right now.
Very quickly. Tell me where they can get it.
Yeah.
Where can you get it again?
All digital formats. All digital formats. As of March 4th.
Wow. Congratulations on Surge and the Swell. You guys sound great.
Yeah.
I just wish you well. I hope you can come back and tell us more about what's in store for your life. So I just want to say thank you for joining us. I had never heard of Surge and the Swell, but I read the band members and I went, oh, yeah, right. So thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Sherilyn. Have a good one.
Take care. All right. All right. I want to also mention that my sister Javita and I are performing at Crooners on March 18th. March 18th is replacing another date that had to be canceled because of COVID. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to Center Stage. I tell you, this hour always uplifts me. Sometimes you hear about bands that you know really well, and other times you find and meet them right on the spot. And I am so excited to talk with Surge and Swell. I don't know this name, but it is the collaboration vehicle of Minnesota-based Americana indie folk singer, songwriter Aaron Cabbage. Born in Kentucky, raised in Southeast Texas via Indiana, and now calling Minnesota home, his influences run north to south. Now, the goal of this LP, this debut LP called Offering, was to create introspective, soaring chorus Americana with a theme of accepting new normal. Songs like Full in the Now, love that title, Hard Work, and Gravity Boots. So cool. We're inspired by the shifts in daily life experienced in the global pandemic and stresses placed on the workforce. Well, joining me now to talk about it is Aaron Cabbage. How you doing, Aaron?
Hey, good, Jalen. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So glad you're joining me. I'm doing great, man. I've been listening to great music all day today. So yours is no. Yeah, exactly. So here's the thing. When you come together and you put this whole thing together, it's a big thing. This band that you have is huge. Tell us more about the members of Surge and Swell.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of one of the goals of going with the band name was just to indicate something that kind of hinted at growth and kind of forward motion. And, you know, rather than just going with the name and trying to write some songs, I really wanted to have it be a collaboration vehicle, as you mentioned at the top. Adam Levy is a bit of a mentor of mine. From a songwriting perspective, had taken a couple of songwriting courses with him. And early on, about a couple of years ago, started to kind of bounce, you know, things off of him from a songwriting perspective, and ultimately, pulled together a group, including Noah Levy, Isaac Levy, Adam, Steve Wold, Katie Garrity, who you heard on the track there at the top, I think,
yeah.
And then Sarah Souter and Matthew Kirkwald, and then with a couple of other members, Sarah Roddy and Randy Onacek. Kevin, and I think one of the tracks on the album has a, not think, I know one of the tracks on the album has a, as an Oregon track from Kevin Gastonguay. So it's, it's been, you know, at the Ice House gig, March 5th album release, Josh Kaplan will be playing drums with us. So it's really, it's just the community that I've met here since I started this project is pretty incredible.
It really is. I mean, as I was reading about it, first of all, to know that you, did you spend time in Indiana? I just want to make sure I'm clear on that.
Yeah, I feel like also, you know, we almost crossed paths in Gary. My oldest brother was born in Gary, Indiana, but I was my parents had moved back to Owensboro, where I was born, and then we quickly, I think at a couple months old, moved to Texas. So, when I moved back to Indiana in seventh grade, I still had a pretty thick accent and said y'all a lot, and I think I was just young enough to get teased and to kind of neutralize the accent. And then I just followed a family up to Minnesota in 98 and obviously love it here. And it's home.
Are they a family of performers or musicians?
We grew up in, my dad played in bands in high school in Owensboro, and he's an accountant by trade, but he's always been a bit of an artist. So, you know, when I originally kind of set up the home studio, I felt like it was the equivalent of, you know, I grew up listening to him play piano at night. So I could, you know, whether he knows it or not, I could always hear him from the other room. You know, I think I love the song, but he did play Joy to the World too many times. But, I grew up listening to him play, and so I think, you know, that was a big part of it. And he's always been a woodworker as well. So, you know, he goes into the shop and makes art, and I kind of feel like initially songwriting for me was just that. It was just an outlet, something I could spend 3 or 4 hours doing and not think twice about it.
If I'm not mistaken, this particular project, is it an EP with 6 songs or is it a full album?
No, great question. Yeah, last year I had a EP with 6 songs, and One of them was called Love 4000, which was a bit of a long distance relationship love song, and it started to kind of get some traction here recently, ironically. But this was this is an 11 song LP, so it's my first LP.
Wow.
And yeah, it's 11 songs is a lot more than six, I'll say.
You got that right.
In terms of pulling it all together, recording, I guess what the proverbial, or like, I don't know if it's attributing this wrong, but Quincy Jones, making an album is like painting a school bus with a toothbrush, is that what it says? But it's a lot more work, but it was really rewarding.
Where can people get the album?
So it's available March 4th. There are two singles out right now.
Very quickly. Tell me where they can get it.
Yeah.
Where can you get it again?
All digital formats. All digital formats. As of March 4th.
Wow. Congratulations on Surge and the Swell. You guys sound great.
Yeah.
I just wish you well. I hope you can come back and tell us more about what's installed for your life. So I just want to say thank you for joining us. I had never heard of Surge and the Swell, but I read the band members and I went, oh, yeah, right. So thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Sherilyn. Have a good one.
Take care. All right. All right. I want to also mention that my sister Javita and I are performing at Crooners on March 18th. March 18th is replacing another date that had to be canceled because of COVID.